show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we mentioned it last week, and it's here again how quickly, how much of a difference a week can make as we talk about the Kansas City Royals on the Royal Coaster, as the term once coined by David Leske. But before we get into this week's happening, introductions, of course, I'm your host, Jeff Herr. With me, the incomparable Michael Engel. Mike, on this sweltering evening here in the Kansas City area, how are you doing?
Ugh, I had to bump up the air conditioner, and I didn't want to do that. I've been making do, you know, setting in at like 75 and living by it and being okay.
Yep.
And save a little money, but no, I had to pull it down. It was too hot outside.
We did the same. We had to drop it, and we might buy for lack of a better option. We turned my daughter, the room that is now my daughter's room, happens to be the hottest room in the house. Because it faces south and it's got two windows.
Oh, yeah.
It's just always like super hot in there. We're like, man, what are we going to do with this baby? You know, thankfully, for the most part, she wasn't really sleeping in there. But now that she's a little bit older now, she's starting to sleep in there. So we went and bought an AC unit over the weekend, like a single, you know, window unit.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that bad boy in there. And we're cranking down the rest of the AC in the house. So it's getting to be about that time of year. The dog days of summer, if you will.
Yeah.
And as we enter the dog days of summer, baseball season being in full swing, and that's usually when, in the last couple of years, the Royals, once things have really started to warm up, the Royals have also warmed up and kind of made some runs here. You talked about like the June, July, August time frame over the last couple of years. At any point in there, the Royals over the last two seasons have made a run or two. So things were not looking like that was going to be the case last week. And after the Royals had won eight in a row to take a stranglehold on the division, it seemed, at 30-22. Not really a stranglehold, but they were 3.5 games up, I think, at their largest point.
It was like 3 against one team and 3.5 against
exactly.
The other. It was good.
A solid lead for this early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting with a four-game sweep at the hands of the Cleveland Indians, the Royals lose six straight, and it was just bad news. And they win eight straight, they won six straight. The eight straight is the loss. Scott, I'm all over the place. Too many streaks and two little sleep last night. My daughter decided to change her sleeping schedule last night. So I have been out of sorts all day today, but that's all right. They were 24-22. They were just kind of were teetering above 500. They won the six straight to get to 30-22. And they lost eight straight and they were back to 500. We thought we were – once they hit that 24-22, we thought they weren't going to have to dip back into the 500 territory. But here we were. And then since then, they've now won four straight. They're 34-30. Again, they got swept by the Indians, and then now they're back. They've won two straight against the Indians. So it's a question of, you know, can they keep this going? And how, you know, it's at this point, do we even know what to make of the Royals? Because we've got, you know, all the things that happened. We talked about Danny Duffy last week and how well he's been doing. We talked about Yordano Ventura and his idiocy. And how not well he's been doing.
Yeah.
And then Danny Duffy, you know, reaffirmed what we were saying and had another really good performance, only to be followed the next day by Yordano Ventura having his best performance definitely this year, maybe the last 2 years. I mean, it's just a really, really good performance from Yordano Ventura that we had. So, you know, who knows when his suspension will actually occur and when all that stuff will go down. But, you know, he looked like the ace that the Royals need. And Danny Duffy has looked that well. So it's just, are we going to get those two guys for the rest of the year, or are we going to get 2015, 2012 Duffy that was, you know, pitch efficiency issues and couldn't get out of the fifth inning and was erratic, and Yordano Ventura that couldn't control himself on the mound and can't, you know, the guy we saw last season, the guy we've seen this season so far. So, you know, what do you make of him at this point, Mike?
Well, Ventura, I don't know what to make of him because he's looked lost all season. Like, bad control, the fastball command has not been good. He's been hammered over the plate, hasn't been getting swings and misses, just hasn't had composure or anything. And then he goes through it. He hits Machado in that game in Baltimore and then turns around and throws just a great game. Just looked like everything was working. Fastball was 98 to he touched 100 on at least one of them. Curveball was biting. The changeup was working. I mean, he was just completely in control of everything. All of his pitches, himself, everything worked. And, you know, to see him do that, it shows you, one, what he's capable of, and two, shows how just maddening it is sometimes for him to be on that mound and just completely lose whatever semblance he had of you know, his ability. And he wasn't touching his you know, potential in any way. There have been some who have said his mechanics have been out of whack, and this is the first time that they looked consistent through the game. So, you know, I don't know. There was a point in during that last start where I was like, you know, he had gone six innings, and I wasn't sure if you sent him out for the seventh. I think he had been through like 78 pitches through seven or something. And I just wasn't sure just because I didn't quite trust him to get through one more inning. He did. He made it. It was fine. And ends up with 10 strikeouts and walk. And that's following up on Duffy, who, since he's joined the rotation, he's looked fantastic. You know, every start has been pretty strong, with the exception of that one inning in Chicago where he gave up, you know, just a couple of bloopers and a couple of home runs. And really, that was after he retired 16 guys in a row to start the game.
Right.
So a really weird start. But, you know, what I'm looking at with Duffy is that, you know, he's being way more pitch efficient than he's ever been at any stage. We're looking at like, I don't know. It's 430 pitches is what I've got looked up here. 31 innings pitched as a starter. So, you know, that's what.
Well, at one start, I'm not sure which one it is off the top of my head, but there was one that they had recently where I think he was taking 70 pitches into the seventh inning or something like that. I mean, just a really, really efficient pitch number for him to have, especially a guy like him who's battled it his whole career.
Yeah, I mean, his last start, he got 10 strikeouts in six innings and threw 88 pitches. And he also, you know, he walked three guys, and he hadn't walked anybody in his last, you know, 20-some innings. So, you know, back in the day, 88 pitches, that'd be a good three or four innings from Danny Duffy. Mm-hmm. And now he's striking out 10 guys and going six full innings. You know, just kind of remarkable to see that sort of transformation. You know, he's averaging about 13 pitches per inning as a starter, which that's pretty good, you know, considering he's usually about 18 or 19. He's about 3.5 pitches per batter faced as a starter. And that's with, you know, 38 strikeouts and 31 innings. So he's completely dominant right now with everything that he's doing. And 38 strikeouts, five walks. I mean, it's Danny Duffy with five walks. That's been an inning before, I'm pretty sure, as a starter in, you know, 2012 or 2012 is about, you know, 2013, 2014. No, he didn't pitch in 2013, did he?
No, that was his Tommy John.
He was coming back, yeah. So 2014.
He pitched the beginning of the season, I think, but then he missed the rest of it. But we get your point.
Yeah, so basically he's a completely changed starter. And it's awesome to see that. That's one of those things that it's like, I'm not sure how long he's going to be this good, but I think he can really sustain being pretty good. A lot of what he's doing, you know, his fastball is about 2 miles per hour harder as a starter than it was in his other time starting. His changeup, he's using that a lot more. So it just seems like he's really mixing those well. One of the mechanical adjustments he's made is he's only going from the stretch from the mound, which, you know, simplifies things. You know, if that makes him more efficient in pacing himself and, you know, getting the full delivery from windup to the plate, you know, or the stretch to the plate, you know, that's fewer moving parts that might make it simpler for him to execute the pitch and focus on everything he needs to do. And whatever it is, it's definitely working. So I'm pretty encouraged by Duffy. I think he can continue to be pretty good. I don't know if he's going to be 9 strikeouts, no walks good like he was at Baltimore or, you know,
right.
Just this guy. You know, he's going to walk some guys sometimes. But, you know, I think he's been doing better at missing bats and getting fewer pitches fouled off and extending those kind of at bats that, you know, usually, you know, you can maybe go 1-2, they foul a couple, it's 2-2, foul 1-3-2, and then you lose them. You know, that's not happening. He's getting a lot weaker contact and he's missing bats more often. And I think that's as a result of his fastball being much faster. It's just, you know, it's, if that's as simple as it is to just tell him to go out there and shove, you know, I wonder why they haven't done that all along. But it's definitely encouraging.
Yeah, and it might just be something that kind of had to click. You know, I remember I'm in my day job when I'm not Supremo podcaster man, I'm an accountant. And I remember, you know, one of my introductory accounting classes, like all these things being thrown at you. And like, it's so like, oh my God, you know, I'm never going to understand this. I'm never going to get all this stuff. Why is it not making sense? And then, you know, you get through that class, you go to the next one and it's more advanced stuff. And then you go back to the different things that you learned in the introductory class. And it's like, oh, well, all this stuff makes way more sense now. And I don't wonder if, you know, obviously it's not the same, but if there's kind of a semblance of that kind of a thing going on where it's like, okay, yeah, you know, you can say as a starter to have the mentality of a reliever, but until you have an extended period of the, and even when Duffy has had bullpen stints in the past, it wasn't like, hey, you're a reliever now. It was, hey, you're going to be in the bullpen because we need you here for X reason, and then we'll put you back in the rotation. You know, that was always the prevailing thought. But at the beginning of the season, that was not what it was. It was, hey, you know, you've struggled some as a starter. We're going to put you in the bullpen, and that's going to be your role for this team, and we're going to see where it goes from there. And so I think this was the first season that as a reliever, he truly changed his mentality. And I think that might play into it a little bit. So he said, now he truly was a reliever for a little bit. And so he's like, okay, now all this stuff clicks. When they say, you know, pitch like you're a reliever, even though it's a, you know, you're a starter, it's like, that makes a little bit more sense now. And the term that you use, Mike, that I like is, you know, 6 sprints instead of 1 marathon of 6 innings. And I think that is, you know, it's kind of key, and it just can illustrate the difference in what his, what his mentality or his approach could change to. And if that's all it takes, and it, you know, it's him operating out of the stretch, and there's some parts of his windup that complicate things a little bit too much, and this simplifies it for him, then absolutely, you know. And you look at pitchers, it's not necessarily something new. You look at pitchers, Johnny Cueto, and, you know, even David Price a little bit, you know. So a lot of pitchers nowadays, they have a really, really simplified windup, and essentially one of their first moves in the windup is to basically turn to where they're in the stretch position and take their mechanics from there. So, you know, the idea that you know, you need to be in this, obviously not a rule that you have to pitch from the windup if there's nobody on base. And the the commonly accepted notion is that you gain a little bit of velocity from it, I think, theoretically, to where, you know, you get that little extra power from the wind-up motion. But, you know, I mean, you look at Wade Davis, Luke Hochaver. I mean, those are guys that they operate from the wind-up primarily as a reliever.
They seem didn't to do all
success.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't have success as a starter, but then winding up. So, you know, maybe there's something to it, and they all throw hard. And like you said, Danny Duffy's been throwing harder. So, and I think the most encouraging sign to me, besides the numbers, which are very encouraging, is you look at him, he passes the eye test, you know, to me. He looks calmer out there. He looks more sure of himself. He looks – you could see it in his body language and his face. And I'm not a big, like, oh, body language determines everything type of guy. But, you know, when something's going wrong and you can see their body language mm-hmm. change, then you can know going forward, okay, when the body language changes, things aren't gonna start being – or things are going to start going poorly for him. So, you know, Danny Duffy was – he was very easy to see his body language change, his demeanor change, and a lot of that is kind of gone now. He looks – part of me, it's easy to be calm when you're doing really well. But
true.
You know, even if he gets into a little bit of trouble or if he walks a guy or something, it used to be – it almost seemed like he walked one guy and then it was all kind of over from there. And then he was in his own head and he was getting too – trying to be too fine with his pitches, trying to make up for the walk with the next batter. And now maybe it's part of that reliever's mentality where it's like, okay, one guy got on, no big deal. Just shut it out, get the next guy. Whereas maybe that was something that affected him a little bit differently previously. So, you know, very, very encouraging from him. And Jordan Ventura, I don't know what to make of him either. You know, it's – There was a lot of consternation after the fight, and with his suspension coming down, and he's lost the locker room. His teammates don't really like him. You know, the organization's fed up with his crap, and I don't necessarily think there's any of that to really disagree with from what I've heard. That it's just asinine that they would say that kind of stuff. But, you know, and maybe. Maybe it's taken all this commotion, all this press, all this negative stuff to be kind of a wake-up call that, you know, you can't rest on his laurels if that's what he's doing. He can't get out of control if that's what he's doing. He needs to be able to just kind of stay within himself and go to work. And if that's – maybe it took all that finally to click for him. And, you know, because it's not – last year it was easy to put up with his crap because even though – things weren't going super well for him, things were going super well for the Royals. They were just like, all right, just keep doing your thing. It's no big deal. We're winning games and you'll keep rolling. You'll find it eventually. And they sent him down and then he found it. And so, you know, maybe it's a similar situation now where, but with all the fights and stuff, even though he got in the fights last year and that didn't necessarily, you know, quote unquote, wake him up, but maybe this year, with the way the team was going and having the issues that they've had, it's kind of a mentality in the locker room of, man, we don't have time for this. We're in a race now. We're not, you know, we're trailing in the division. We're having some struggles. We don't have time to put up with your crap, to put up with all this. And, you know, you need to, you know, the kind of a policing with the locker room situation. So I don't know if that's what's happened. That's just a possibility. You know, maybe it was just a fluke good start and he'll go back to being, you know, unfortunately bad. But like you said, the best word for it is maddening, similar to how when Danny Duffy would have his issues, they were also maddening, because when those two pitchers are on, you see it. You see the talent, you see the results, you see what they can be. Now it's just a question of, can they put it together and keep it together for an extended period of time? And if Duffy can pitch like he has the last month,
yeah,
and Ventura can harness what he had in his last start and pitch like that, and those two pitch at that level for the rest of the season, this team looks completely different. Completely different than they did a month ago. Because a month ago, you're still rocking Medlin and Young in the rotation, and Duffy's in the bullpen, and Ventura's really struggling, and everything seems like it's not going all that great. But, you know, if you know, Volquez and Kennedy keep doing their thing, and then Duffy and Ventura can bottle up what they've been doing and get it moving the rest of the season. I mean, it looks – then your only real problem is your number five starter, and you can you can get some sort of Frankenstein's monster of Dillon G, yeah. Chris Medlin, Chris Young, and whomever. Piece that together for the rest of the year until you can hopefully make a playoff run where you don't need a fifth starter.
That would be nice. I just checked over his last four starts, Jordana Ventura has walked only three guys, which is pretty good. He has given up 28 hits, and one of those games was pretty rough in Baltimore, just before he hit Manny Machado. So a little good, a little bad, but 20-3 strikeout to walk ratio in his last four starts, covering 24.1 innings, 24 and a third. So I guess you can kind of live with that part. Just, you know, hopefully he doesn't keep getting hit. You know, that's kind of the thing. So if that's maybe something that the peripherals are better, but they're just obscured by, you know, at least in these last four, and it's four starts. It's only four starts. It's not, you know, this could be a good, quote unquote, good stretch, and he can easily revert back to everything else, like you said. You know, but there were two rough starts, one against Chicago, the crazy comeback day, where he didn't pitch terribly. He just didn't pitch well. And but he had two good outings in that stretch as well. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see how that develops. We'll see how the suspension comes down. He's appealing it now. You know, I think the appeal's not going to effectively do much. I think it's basically going
to... I think it's the Royals trying to manage the situation and find a good time for him to be on
suspension. If they can cut a game off of it, it makes it something they can manipulate easier with the schedule and make it work. Or if, you know, he just chooses when to drop it and it happens to work to the Royals' benefit so they can minimize the exposure of anybody else, well, then there you go. So, and that's probably what's going to happen. You know, I mean, it's not like it's a secret. They're not doing anything any other team hasn't done or will continue to do. So we'll see how that little hiatus goes for him. And if he can kind of keep some of the good stuff going and ideally, you know, minimize the bad stuff and kind of keep everything under control. And you're right. If Giordano and Danny Duffy are pitching well and pitching like they have the last couple of days or close to it, even, you know, that puts them at the top of the rotation. And now you're looking at Ian Kennedy, instead of asking him to be that number one stopper type guy, he can be a number three or four. And, you know, that's much more befitting his talent profile, and Volquez too, to an extent. Though I think Volquez, you know, at this stage, he's pitched, you know, in a lot of big playoff games, pitched two big World Series games. I don't think he, you know, he's not going to be shying away from anything, but, you know, he hasn't been extremely sharp either. So
no,
it'd be nice to have him maybe down to where if you have two guys who are dominating or at least encouraging, well, that's one thing, and then those two you can kind of look to for, you know, six innings a start and keep your team in the game and just kind of go from there. And if that happens, you know, the Royals look pretty okay. I mean, they you know, it'll at least help them prevent runs from scoring, which was when they were losing, it wasn't like they were losing 3-1 or 3-2, and it was just a few plays. It was like they were getting bombed. No,
they were getting smoked.
They gave up like 21 or 22 homers in an eight-game stretch.
Well, I got it pulled up. Their schedule pulled up here. So in that eight-game losing streak consecutively, they gave up, starting with the 5-4 walk-off loss, five runs, six runs, seven runs, seven runs, four runs, nine runs, four runs, seven runs. Yeah. And in the span – outside of the first and last game of that eight-game losing streak, the six in the middle, they scored a total of four runs.
Yeah.
Shut out twice.
It was just miserable. And it was, you know, there were games where they got three hits and got shut out. And there were games where they got 10 hits and got shut out. And it's just like, oh, boy. You know, and it's, you know, you look over the last four games where the Royals have won, and they've won by, what, four, you know, like I think three runs a game. So it's like 2-1 last night, and 3-1. 4-1,
3-1, 2-1, and 3-2.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's where it shows, hey, if you get a little bit of pitching for this team, that's what can happen. They can make those three four runs hold up. And
I mean, that was recipe for success in 2015.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's that four run mark. That's where they kind of sit all the time. And it's just like, that's all you need from your starters is six innings, three earned runs, quality start, and hand it over to the bullpen. And you've got about a million arms in the bullpen who can close things out for you. And obviously anchored by Herrera and Davis. And Soria has been getting some late inning stuff, much to some folks' consternation, but he's been doing it. So, I mean, that's if they can continue that good pitching and just enough offense. I mean, that's last 2 years, that's what they've done. And, you know, that's what you hope to see the rest of the way. You know, Alex Gordon's going to be coming back fairly soon. Might be a couple of weeks. You know, so at that stage, you get another big bat back into your lineup. Maybe Kendrys Morales can hit a little bit. And you've still got the guys that we've talked about, you know, already. You know, Brett Eibner, who was electric. He's about eligible. I think he's eligible to come off tomorrow. He's on a rehab stint. I don't know what they're going to do with him because it's not like Raymond Fuentes has played poorly in his absence. But, you know, Eibner was playing well at the same time. So, you know, they could option either of those guys and just keep the other one in Kansas City. And then you have guys like Salvador Perez is hitting like crazy lately. And Eric Hosmer's
Yeah, he's strong. Up to like 290, Salvador Perez.
Yeah. With, what, 10th homer last night? And,
yep.
You know, just
saved the game last night with a home run. He's at 293, Salvador Perez.
Just, I mean, he's hitting 293. It's Sal Perez with.
And that's after going 0 for 1 tonight already. So he was probably at 295 or so.
It's crazy. So, yeah, you get those guys. You get the kind of core of Kane, Hosmer, Perez. Hopefully Morales can hit some. But even Whit Merrifield, who we've talked about the last 2 weeks and who is everybody's favorite player right now, he's hitting like crazy too. And really even forced the Royals' hand, or at least allowed them to make a pretty big change in designating Omar Infante for assignment today. Which
yes, big news there.
Didn't think that. I mean, I think the writing was on the wall because he hadn't really been in a game since that Cleveland loss, where his
debacle.
Yeah, where his throw on a double play pivot, you know, ended up giving up a run and really changed the complexion of the game and changed how the ninth inning could lay out. So, you know, that was a big deal. And, you know, he hadn't hit, you know, he had a good start and he had like seven doubles in the first couple of weeks and then really started to, you know, really struggle. And as Craig Brown showed on a piece that went up today, actually just a few hours before the Royals made this decision, you know, he showed that his contact rate has been going down. He's swinging at more pitches as well. So, you know, it's not like, hey, you can swing at stuff, but they're always going to be strikes. It's like he's swinging at everything and he's missing more often too. The defense is not good. And that arm has not looked good at any stage since even spring training. So the only difficult part of doing that was his contract. And, you know, the Royals finally, you know, had enough and had to make the move. So they're on the hook for the last $14 million of his contract. You know, he still has another year on it. And it's just like they had to make the move. They had to prioritize winning over anything else, even if it meant that there's going to be dead money out there, because it's just you couldn't justify keeping him on the roster anymore. And, you know, they just needed that spot for some other movement and swapping guys out and getting a new pitcher up and those kinds of things, which was kind of surprising. I kind of thought they might wait a little bit. But, you know, once they stopped playing him at all and they called up Christian Colon, it was like, all right, they've got two guys who they're going to play at second base more frequently than Omar. Omar can't play anywhere else. He's not going to hit. It is pretty clear what was going to happen. It just the timing of it, I think, is what surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, I think we all kind of thought that it was going to occur, but just right now didn't seem like it was going to be the time. Not that it was necessarily a bad time, but it just didn't seem like it was all that necessary as much. But, you know, with Gordon and Ivner still out, but I mean, I think you called it pretty well. Like the emergence of Whit Merrifield kind of forced their hand. They were just like, you know what? We got a roster spot here that we can use better, that we can make the team better by adding someone who's actually going to contribute. And we got Whit Merrifield that's going to be able to give you second base, give you an adequate second base, and right now a very good second base in terms of offensive production and defense, quite frankly. So when Omar was, you know, essentially a giant hole in the lineup and no more than just a standing kind of cardboard cutout almost on defense, just to say like, hey, we have a second baseman, he's out there, you know, he didn't really add a ton. He was, his turns were, they'd been, since he'd been a Royal, they were getting increasingly worse on double plays. And they just, this year, they've just been so poor, and so many just like multiple bouncers to first base. I mean, you know, sometimes if you make a difficult turn, and sometimes you kind of throw the ball down a little bit more than you like because you have to jump to turn or something,
or you're rushing, or you're just trying to get it. Yeah.
Then a hard bounce or something, it isn't the worst thing in the world. Hosmer is a good first baseman. He can make that thing. That's not the biggest thing, but just, you know, normal standard double play turns that you would expect to happen, and just, you could tell it was just an arm strength issue. It's just, it wasn't there. It just, the arm was not there. And so, you know, the Royals, and Dayton Moore came on the radio today and he admitted it. The words he said were, it was a mistake that should not have been made, which is, for this organization, those are incredibly powerful words. They never throw anyone, not that they're throwing Omar under the bus, but they never talk bad about players. They never do anything like that. So to say that about Omar Infante is, it was incredibly surprising. And you just don't hear this team talk about players like that. They always hide them. And, you know, Ned Yost alluded to, you know, just the performance wasn't there, and he kind of alluded to the fact that they all knew it, even though the whole time Ned Yost was being the champion that he is, which is why the players in the locker room love him so much. But he was saying the right things about Omar to the media. He didn't throw him under the bus, but now he's gone. And so he was basically like, yeah, we all knew it. You know, we were trying to make it work, more or less. I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, the time had come and it's over now. So really kind of interesting to hear that. And if we kind of thought it last year when they sat Omar for the playoffs, but it's 100% certain now more than ever that this organization, if winning a World Series wasn't enough, the old Royals that play contracts instead of playing players, those Royals are gone. This team is all about winning, and if they have to eat millions of dollars, then they're going to do it because they're going to give the team a better chance to win. And that is a credit to David Glass, who, you know, admittedly didn't like to do that early on in his tenure as owner, but now, and after winning that World Series, I think he's to the point where he's, let's win another one. And I don't care, you know, obviously the money isn't limitless, and he's not going to necessarily say, let's go out and pay Zach Greinke $31 million a year. But if it comes down to eating $14 million to make the team better, that's something that he's prepared to do, which is a very encouraging sign for the Royals, especially with possibly needing to fill a hole or two at the trade deadline. I don't know if they're going to make a trade, but it's at least something to say, you know, just like they did last year, David Glass can be convinced to throw a few extra, to throw a little bit more wood on the fire, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also important to note that when we talk about, hey, $14 million for Omar, you know, that's just what's left on his contract. It's split up to about $4 million the rest of this year to cover the remaining salary, plus $8 million for next year, and then there was a $2 million buyout for a mutual option or a team option. I don't remember which it was, for the year after. So it's going to be $4 million against this year's payroll, which, you know, you can kind of get by on that. $8 million against next year's, and then $2 million against the year after that. So you know, it's not like the $14 million is hit right now, but it is also going to be dead money for the next 2 years. So it's not, you know, you can't ignore it. It's just a matter of, you know, it's not like they're, you know, they're eating it right now and just, ah, all right, you know, whatever. You know, we have $14 million. It's nothing. You know, they do get a little bit of kind of leeway in that it's broken down that way, but it's still, you know, that's a full year and a half commitment to a player that, you know, they're going to still pay him, and they're going to pay him specifically to not be on their team.
Yes.
Which, you know, I Omar was frustrating, you know, really frustrating as a player, because, you know, you always saw him when he played against the Royals that it seemed like he was always going like 4 for 5 against them with a, you know, a couple hits, just a couple singles and a double or something, you know, just always doing something. And, you know, he always had some elbow problems and shoulder problems as soon as he was a Royal, and they never really got resolved properly, I don't think. And, you know, just never really got it going. But, you know, that's it. It's a business. The Royals have better options, they feel, to play second base. And, you know, that's it. That's all you can really do about it. He had to kind of move. We'll see if that means anything. Like you said, at the trade deadline, maybe, hey, if we're going to just dump Omar, maybe we can add some payroll. You know, maybe they go out and trade for somebody, or, you know, maybe that makes it more likely, or maybe, I don't know. Maybe that money ends up hampering them. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But I think they're more inclined to be ready to buy, especially if they're saying, hey, we just want to win, you know, and we're going to worry about the financial problem or financial ramifications of it later, and just see what happens on the field, which it's really refreshing, because you know, when there were so many times where they just couldn't, where it seemed like forever for them to dump Jose Guillen or Jeff Francoeur or Jonathan Sanchez, you know, just guys who just wore out their welcome at a certain point, some of them faster than others. That was, you know, it's nice to see that, hey, they're going to recognize what the situation is right now and make whatever change they need to, you know, that kind of works for them. And so, you know, there you are. Omar Infante is just out there. And I don't anticipate anybody picking him up or trading for him, so he'll probably be released. No. If any team does want him, they will pay him the league minimum prorated for this year or for whatever next year. And the Royals will cover the rest. So, you know,
if I was Omar, he's pretty well done. So I would just make a de facto retirement and say, hey, I'm available, but just tell my agent to put it out there that I'm not really available. Take the paychecks from the Royals for the next year and a half, hang out, watch some Price is Right, call it a career. He's had a really good career. And, you know, he just, unfortunately, none of those good years came with the Royals. But that's what I would do if I was Omar Infante. We'll see what he does. But
I'm guessing he'll try to stick it out a little bit more. But
I'm sure somebody will be interested, and he'll probably try and say, I want to make one last run at it and see if I can really do this. And, you know, he's a competitor, I'm sure, just like they all are. So it would totally make sense.
Yep.
But one thing that it does do in the short term is it makes room for the guy we've been talking about, Whit Merrifield. And, man, you mentioned it earlier, Mike, everyone seems to love him. And it's just, man, he's just been – he's been doing really well. And it doesn't – you know, you think like, okay, maybe teams are going to adjust to him and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But he's played 23 games now. He's had 97 plate appearances. Still a small sample size, relatively speaking. But, you know, 100 plate appearances is a decent judge in a season for how a player, you know, whether or not they're you know, Kendrys Morales after 100 plate appearances was not doing very well. So
yeah, you know, you can reliably say he's not doing well.
Yes, but Merrifield's currently sitting with a .326 batting average, .340 on base percentage, and a .505 slugging. He's hit a home run in two straight games. He's already got 9 doubles in his 97 plate appearances. He's got, let's see, he's got one triple and the two home runs, and then nine. I mean, he's got, let's see, how many? 10 multi-hit games out of 23 in his young career. So
two-hit wit,
and three hits even for one of these games. So, what the Royals have been getting out of him now. You know, I mean, he's not going to be Ben Zobrist. He's not going to be Derek Jeter. He's not going to be all these different players that people want to try. No one's really compared to Derek Jeter. But, you know, of all the people that he's been compared to, he's probably not going to be any of them. But what the Royals are getting out of him right now is incredibly impressive. And it's starting to get to that point now where even if he's not going to be Ben Zobrist, you got to think, okay, some of the naysayers, if you will, were saying, okay, Whit Merrifield, maybe he has a hot couple weeks and then he's just going to, die off and then he's going to go back down to the minors and that'll be it. I suppose it's still possible to happen, but what he's showing me when I look at him and see him play and see the results is that worst case scenario, he's going to be a very good bench player for a Major League Baseball team. Yeah. And there is a ceiling of him being a very solid everyday major league player that gives you average to above average defense. And if he can give you a line that is like 260, 320, 380, that type of a line, offensively, and hit 5 to 10 home runs and maybe swipe, 25 bags for you on the bases, like that's a really valuable player and a guy that, if you look at the last, going back probably 5 years now, to what the Royals have had at second base, and you put him in that, I mean, that's way better than anything the Royals have been trotting out there for the last few years. And I mean, does that seem reasonable in your eyes? If that's a line we could realistically hope for, or a slash line we could realistically hope for, and would you take that right now? If we gave it to you,
I would live with that. I mean, if he did that the rest of the way, that'd be fine. I mean, I'd like the on base to be a little, just because he's hitting leadoff right now. Mm-hmm. 320 is okay. Escobar's been leading off and he's got a 268 on base, but mm-hmm. So I guess if that's fine, it's whatever. But yeah, he's playing out of his mind, but at the same time, like his batting average on balls in play is high. It's like 392, but he's also getting 22% of those as line drives. So that's something that I think you can sustain. And he's got the swing that will produce line drives. It's not a power swing. I don't think you can really expect a ton of power. I think, 5 to 10 home runs, that's probably about it. He hit 8 home runs a couple of years ago and 9 a few years before that. So, he's not going to be a power guy, but he could hit 30 to 40 doubles all the time. And he's got enough speed and great instincts to steal bases. I mean, he stole 16 out of 17 bases in Omaha before he got called up. And the year before, he stole 32 out of 41. So he's really good at that part of it. It's just going to be a matter of, how does he sustain it? What kind of things does he adjust to? Hunter Samuels showed earlier on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City that pitchers were staying in the zone on him. They were throwing more fastballs. So I would expect they probably will adjust and see what he'll chase. But he puts together a good at bat. He's seen almost 4 pitches per at bat. It's 3.98, which is the highest on the Royals right now. If you take out guys like Tony Cruz or Terrence Gore, who have only had a handful of at-bats, and he's below Alex Gordon, who technically doesn't qualify, I don't believe, because of the injury taking him out, and Mike Moustakas also. But he's up there. He's seeing more pitches per at-bat than Lorenzo Cain and Eric Hosmer and guys who, at this point are considered more veteran guys. Who know the strike zone, who can handle the at bat, can handle fouling off pitches and things like that. And Merrifield's right there, you take all of that together, great swing, knowledge of the strike zone. He hasn't walked yet, but he also seems like someone who's just ready to just hit something that's in the zone hard, which sometimes you can kind of get in trouble that way. But he seems sharp enough that he's going to, you know, lay off if he needs to. So you take everything plus his versatility, and yeah, 260, 320, 380, is that what you said? That's with all the positions he could play, that's pretty valuable.
And that 380 number might even jump up a little bit, because as you mentioned, you know, like a 30 to 40 doubles is not unreasonable either, especially when you consider, like you mentioned, not only his speed, but just his smart base running. I mean, he's a guy that he'll get maybe probably 5 to 7 over the course of a season, 5 to 7 doubles that should have been singles, because he'll be aggressive on the base paths and he'll catch somebody off guard and he'll stretch a single into a double. So, you know, that's going to pump up your OPS number, and, you know, that's going to make him a more valuable player. And I mean, there's a lot of good things that he does right now, and it will be interesting to see. I do think that was very good, very well-researched article that Hunter had about that, and how the pitchers are treating him. And it will be interesting to see when they change, because I would have thought they would have changed by now, because it was right. It's pretty clear that he was just drilling, that they were challenging him and he was up for the challenge. So I'm surprised they haven't started changing, but I'm sure they will, especially once he gets to start seeing pitchers the second time around.
Mm-hmm.
And then a good kind of barometer for that is another guy we want to talk about, Chester Cuthbert, who started out pretty well. You know, he was hitting, 313 at his highest this season, and he has played 32 games. He's 124 plate appearances. So, you know, a little bit more seasoning than Merrifield in terms of this particular season. And he was never quite as hot as Merrifield, but he's dipped down a little bit. At his lowest point, he was hitting 243. And he has worked his way back up. Now, you know, you look now and he's hitting 277. So he's a guy that started off pretty well. You know, his first four games, he was hitting 313. He had a home run, a few RBIs. He was looking pretty good. And then pitchers started adjusting to him, and he kind of hit that dip. And actually, at one point he was at 237, was actually his lowest. So, you know, he dipped all the way down there. So 70 points on his batting average, and just a obviously small sample size. So it's easier to have those big swings.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, once you start off hot and then you dip low, that means you've already had an accumulated total of at-bats, so it's even harder to climb back up, because the larger the sample size, the harder it is to climb that batting average back up. And he's risen at almost or exactly 40 points since that low point. So, I mean, there's an example of on a less effective scale, but one where it started off okay, pitchers adjusted, he started to decline, and then now it looks as though he's almost made an adjustment. He's been hitting better quietly. He's been hitting better the last week or so. When you look at his last, 7 games, and he's hitting .333 with a .360 on base and a .625 slugging, which included a game where he had 2 home runs in 1 game. So, you know, the Royals, they may not be getting as much from Cuthbert as they are from Merrifield in terms of production, but those two players right now, considering where the Royals were with Omar Infante and a injured Mike Moustakas, and looking pretty dire, the fact that they've been able to get that much from both of these guys so far has been nothing short of spectacular for them. And again, if Cuthbert can, you know, if he can be that 270 hitter, he's got a little bit more pop than Merrifield. So I think it's a, you know, more of a 15 home run type hitter for him, maybe even in the 15 to 20 range. You know, so he might not have as much batting average on base value, but a little bit more power to add. I mean, those guys are two pieces that they're going to get a lot of time this year now, because Infante's gone, Moustakas is out. So those are your guys. You're riding or dying with Merrifield and Cuthbert. And, you know, they're going to have a really good idea at the end of this season whether or not Merrifield and Cuthbert are pieces that they can look at to build with in 2018 after the mass exodus. So, you know, there's right now things are looking up in that department, but it'll be interesting to see how these two players develop the rest of the way.
I like Chesley Cuthbert. He's been one of my favorite prospects for a number of years, and he's only 23. I mean, he doesn't turn 24 for
He's been around forever because they got him so young.
Yeah, I mean, they got it. He's been in the system for years and years now. You know, I just looked at his last, just in the month of June, he's hit three homers and has a double, hitting 325 in that stretch. He strikes out a fair amount, or at least he has this month. He doesn't walk a lot, so those are going to always be, I think, dings against him. But, if he keeps showing
that very Latin American approach,
he's just going to swing. But I think at a certain point, if he does keep showing power, and maybe that's a sign that he's more comfortable now. Maybe he's more comfortable picking his pitch, and sometimes he's just missing it. If you're hitting home runs, some home run hitters a lot of times will strike out a lot because they aren't holding it back. It's a much different approach than what Merrifield does. Merrifield's just totally comfortable, just roping it into the outfield and getting his hit and stealing a base. But Cuthbert's not going to steal a lot of bases. He looks, to me, more athletic than maybe he is speed wise. Because he's not fast. He's not a fast player.
Talking about Cuthbert, yeah.
He's
got a decent amount of lateral quickness.
Yeah.
But straight line speed, it's not there.
Yeah, it's not. But, if he hits the ball off the wall or over the wall, that's fine.
Don't need to be fast to run those bases.
Right. So, and I think that, I think maybe 15 homers is in range over, and maybe just a little shorter because he didn't play up in the big leagues the whole season, but that kind of
just moving forward, the course of a full season, more of a 15 to 20 guy.
Yeah, I think he could do that. And if he does have that kind of power, maybe you guys pitch around him. He walks a little bit more. But another thing that he brings to the table is defense, and that's something that's always kind of been underrated. I'm not saying he's going to win any gold gloves or anything, but we got pretty comfortable with Moustakas at third, who also didn't really have a great reputation as a defender, but showed over the last few years that he's solid to pretty good out there. And Cuthbert is doing a lot of the same things. You're just able to make those big plays. He needs to work a little bit on maybe communicating with Salvador Perez on pop-ups because, one, there was the collision, and, two, there was one that fell last night that just stayed foul. It's pretty cool to watch him just make a diving stab and get up and gun a guy out. He's got
a really good arm.
Really good arm. I would say it's maybe a harder thrower than Moustakas.
It's got to be like a 6 on a scouting scale.
It's pretty good. It's he's got a good cannon over there. So, he's got that as well. And if he can hold that down, the Royals aren't going to be putting him probably at the top of the lineup unless something really bad happens. So if he can just hang out at that number 7 spot in the lineup and produce, if he hits 270 and has occasional pop, you're fine with that. That's going to be just fine, the rest of the way. As long as he's continuing to play defense and play well at third base, you will take that for a guy stepping in for a guy you consider a cornerstone and a former all-star in Mike Moustakas. And if you get that from Cuthbert, the Royals will be happy, I think.
Yeah. And those two pieces right now, very encouraging for this team. And if they can keep giving you what they've given you, then again, you combine a Merrifield and Cuthbert who can give you solid level of play both on offense and defense with Duffy and Ventura hopefully turning things around and becoming the pitchers we all know they can be. I mean, this team looks a lot different. And it starts tonight. If they win tonight, they're back in first place, tied with the Indians. So and as we speak, this is June 15th for a frame of reference for whenever you're listening. As we speak in the top of the third inning, the Royals are winning 2-0. So,
all right,
there's that. But I think now we're going to use this to go to a first break, and then we're going to talk the Royals. One of the biggest issues with the Royals currently has been their inconsistency on the road versus at home. So we're going to kind of take a little bit of a deeper dive into that when we get back after the break. So stick with us.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Paul Jackson says hello.
The Vault.
this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
So take me home. Nothing to fear. It's just me and my daddy and a kid named Coke, making music that nobody would hear. And then the sun lit up and it split the night, spilling over our jubilee. 10,000 cars by the side of the road, moving far as the eye can see. Said it took me home.
And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus Affiliates. Speaking of Baseball Prospectus, folks, if you go to baseball or go to BP Kansas City, which you should if you're a Royals fan, and if you're listening to this show, you're most likely a Royals fan, unless you're just the most unbelievable just baseball junkie that you listen to a podcast from each and every team. And in that case, welcome. We're glad you're here. But if you're – you should be reading BP Kansas City. And one of our writers there, Darren Watson, recently wrote an article called Roadkill: Royals Pitching Struggles Away from Kansas City. And he detailed in that – I'm not going to be able to go over everything because there's a lot of really good information here. But the gist of it is you look at the Royals' road record and home record. Now, last year – and I just closed it by accident. I'm going to pull it up here. We're going to look at what should not have closed this one.
Well, to illustrate the importance of these kind of splits, the Royals, yes, they won six in a row at home. They went on the road, and then they lost eight in a row. I mean, so and then finally finished up that road trip by winning two. But, you know, you just look at their last 18 games, they're 10-8, which sounds good. But, you know, eight of those wins are at home. And eight of those losses were on the road. And it's such a sharp split that, you know, when you look at it from the perspective of, hey, going forward, you don't want to feel like every road trip is going to be a struggle. Every home stand has to be, you know, a miracle win and a sweep like it's been going over the last, at least through June. You know, they mm-hmm. just cannot sustain that kind of model. And it's kind of exhausting to watch as a fan, too, because you go from elation 2 weeks ago to just utter devastation last week to now you're like, I don't know if I can step out of the house and feel comfortable because everything's going crazy in baseball.
Yeah, so the Royals last year were 51-30 at home, which is a very good home record, 63% win percentage. They were 44-37 on the road, which is a 54% winning percentage. So, you know, I mean, the split there is obviously better at home, but not a huge discrepancy, right? You know, seven games different. That's about what you'd expect to be better at home. So, but looking at it now, the Royals are, as Darren points out in the article, and this he wrote this on June 13th, so there's a couple games. We'll factor those in here, but they're 13-23 on the road, as of June 13th, and they're still, because they've been only played at home since then. But so 13-23 on the road, and then currently they're now 21-7 at home. So that's on pace to win 29 games on the road and 60 games at home. So in total, that's 89 wins, but you don't like to see a huge discrepancy like that, because at 89 wins, if you don't win the division and you're a wild card and you got to go on the road, then it's like, uh-oh. But to further illustrate, one of the things Darren went and calculated for the whole season, and if they were to just play a 162-game schedule at home, they would have the winningest record in baseball history, because they'd be on a 118-win pace. But if they played 162 games on the road, they would be the 2005 Royals again, because they'd be on a 59-win pace. Ugh. So quite a disparity. You know, the further you extend that sample size, the larger that delta is going to be. So, you know, what's kind of the deal here? And Darren went on to talk about they've been outscored on the road 160-117 this year, which is – that's – wow. That's quite a bit.
That's a lot in, you know, about 43 runs in, what was their road record?
13-23. So 36 games.
So run per game, a little more than a run per game. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Yeah. And
it's not good.
You know, because in terms of just the record, you know, obviously they've given up more runs, but then when you look offensively, you know, the numbers that he tabulated, again, this is as of June 13th, so it's probably changed a little bit, but at home the Royals are hitting 275, 328, 419 as a slash line. On the road they're hitting 264, 309, 389. So, you know, obviously better at home, but you would expect that, and not a huge discrepancy there. And they've hit 32 home runs on the road and just 22 at home, which is probably – Royals are one of the few teams that have not only a disparity but maybe a larger disparity between for hitting more home runs on the road versus at home, just simply because the Royals play in Kauffman Stadium. It's a large park.
Yep.
Hard to hit home runs.
And
they're the only team in all of baseball that does not have a 40 home run hitter ever in their history of the organization, which is – sad and pathetic in its own right. We've talked about it later. Maybe we'll talk about it at another point. But
hopefully someone gives us a reason to talk.
Maybe about it again. Hosmer's on pace right now to hit. What's he on pace for? I mean, around 30.
About 30. So if he just got really hot,
if he has a hot month, he could be the Balboni homer demon could be exercised. What, I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe the last time we talked about that, Moustakas got hurt.
That's true. So maybe we should just keep our mouths shut.
Like, but don't tempt it.
But speaking of home runs, you know, this was something that we wanted to talk about. And I was looking up some things today. Mike and I were kind of emailing back and forth. We were talking about the show. And, you know, it's the – I'm going to pull – I got them in the email here. There we go. So the home run to fly ball ratio – for the team in all of 2015, I'm sorry, this is the pitchers. So the home run to fly ball ratio that the pitchers have given up. For 2015, as a team, the Royals were at 7.3% home run to fly ball ratio. 2016, so far, smaller sample size, of course, but all the same, percentage-wise, you would expect to be, even with a smaller sample size, you know, rather close. And they're at 10% right now. So when it comes to a home run fly ball ratio, 3% or so, it's a pretty big gap.
Yeah.
And quite a bit different from last year. Now, if you look at 2015, the number of home runs they gave up on the road is 87, which is 56% of the total home runs they gave up as a team. On 2016, the home runs they've given up on the road is 53 already. In 36 games on the road, 53, which is 69% of the total home runs that they've given up. So if you extrapolate all this stuff out for the entire course of the season, they're on pace to give up 66 home runs at home They gave up 67 last year, so they're roughly the same.
Not bad. That so far so good.
But they're on pace to give up 119 home runs on the road. Last year they gave up 87. So a 30-plus differential in the wrong direction for giving up home runs. Now, if we're to use the kind of theory that every 10 runs equals a win, then the flip side of that would be every 10 runs given up equals a loss, more or less. And so just in a purely numbers perspective, that's already three additional losses the Royals have just from the amount of home runs they would be giving up on the road.
And that's just the batter himself.
That doesn't account for men on base and anything like that. And that was something that if I'd had more time today, I might have tried to look that up a little bit and see, you know, walk rates this year compared to last year from pitchers, because they've been walking more batters, absolutely.
Yep.
And, you know, giving up more hits, definitely. And so, you know, that's a factor as well, because, you know, a home run isn't as bad as a three-run home run. So it's, you know, there's a lot of – there's a little bit of extraneous factors, but just kind of as a thought exercise, the pace that the Royals are giving on now, you know, puts them at a strong at a much larger disadvantage. And if you factor in the additional walks, and then just off the top of my head, you know, you can easily say you're looking at like a 6 or 7 game difference just directly related to the amount of runs they've given up. And when you toss in the fact that even though the Royals still are one of the more premier defenses in baseball, I would say they're defensive run saves, the defense is not as good as it was last year, especially when you don't have Gordon and Moustakas in the lineup. Mm-hmm. And so when you factor all these things together, worse pitches, worse pitching, more walks, more hits given up, more home runs on the road, worse defense, I mean, you know, how many runs does that all equate to? And then how many additional losses? You know, I mean, if you're looking at all that combined giving you 6 or 7, from a theoretical perspective, 6 to 8 additional losses, then you're at, you know, at worst, it's 87 wins, which if this team, the way they started and as poorly as they played, got to 87 wins, I'd be ecstatic. But, you know, is that a division winning number? Is that a wild card number? You know, I mean, last year it would have won the division, but this year isn't last year. And it looks like it's going to be a much tighter division this year than it was last year. And I don't know. I think 87 wins would have, because I think the Astros were 86 and 76, right? Pretty sure that's what they were.
I don't recall.
I think they won 86 games. I think them and the Yankees both won 86 or 87. So I think 87 would have got you into the wild card last year. But who knows if it will this year? You know, there's a lot of.
There have been years where 90 didn't get you into a wild card spot.
Exactly. So, you know, that's just kind of something to think about. Just some interesting stats that we dug up that we thought we'd share. I mean, when you hear all this stuff, Mike and I, we kind of talked about it today, but encapsulate in non-text form. When we were talking about all this, what were your kind of thoughts about everything?
Well, it's just the home runs is the big thing, and to me, you know, I guess I take some solace in the idea that what they're giving up is, you know, if they're giving up about the same rate of home runs at home, then I would think that, you know, it's probably close to the same home run per fly ball ratio as last year, which if the home runs on the road are so great to swell that number up to 10%, which is, you know, compared to the, what, 7.3%. Last year, I mean, that's a jump. That is a huge jump. And when you figure in that, let's just assume I don't have these numbers in front and didn't get them calculated, but I think it makes sense to say that, let's say Kauffman Stadium, that performance is mostly constant. That's how much larger that kind of gap is, or, you know, how worse they've been on the road at keeping the ball in the yard. Which it's kind of a little scary, but at the same time, the rest of the year, it's probably going to fall back closer to what the league average on the road is. or in these stadiums, and you know, perhaps Kauffman Stadium, that performance stays at about the same rate too. So maybe that's something to see some improvement as the year goes on. Plus, if you've got guys like Ventura and Duffy figuring things out, well, maybe that makes it more reliable, fewer runners on base. Maybe they're not giving up home runs, and it just kind of works from there. But yeah, I would expect that it will probably get better. Plus, they, you know, they've played in Baltimore already. They've played in New York, and those are some home run heavy stadiums. So I, you know, maybe that will help to get them. Though they still have to go to Toronto, and you know, it's not like they're out of the woods. It's just a matter of, you know, they have been in two pretty heavy home run spots, and you know, they had Chris Young, who was just before he got hurt, you know, before he went on the disabled list, pitched in Yankee Stadium, gave up those five. Good they Lord. Were all solo. If that counts for anything,
they might have actually hit fewer home runs in batting practice.
Maybe. Though I saw a clip from an old timers game. They do that old timers game at Yankee Stadium every year, and Hideki Matsui hit a home run into the second deck. So, you know, I mean, if that tells you anything about how that stadium is built. But, you know, they've played a couple series in Cleveland, and Cleveland isn't really a big park. You know, they will play in Philadelphia. They'll play in Toronto next month, or at the end of this month and into next month. But they've still got a lot of games, you know, at Detroit, at Minnesota, places like that. So it's not as if, you know, they're going to be playing in those smaller stadiums all season. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, they've just got to kind of dial it down. And if that means that Chris Young isn't pitching as much, because I, when we were talking about this, I asked if you had a Chris Young filter for this, like the Aroldis Chapman filter on the StatCast pitching velocity. You know, because Chris Young has been almost historic with how many home runs he's given and the rate he's given them up. It's far and away different from last year. I think he's already given up more homers this year than he did last year, which is remarkable. And he didn't give up a ton last year. So, you know, long story short, yeah, they haven't played well on the road. And if that is something that sinks them come playoff time, well, it's probably going to be the pitching that you point to in that sense. You know, Ian Kennedy signed here, but he's notorious for being home run prone. And you take him out of Kauffman Stadium, take Chris Young out of Kauffman Stadium. You know, those guys were signed because their skill set, their abilities fit the stadium, and you get half your games there. And then some of the other road games, Minnesota, Detroit, they'll play in Citi Field. You know, they'll play in other big stadiums. They get that opportunity to, you know, play in other parks that are pretty big. And so, you know, you're not going to play every game on the road in a bandbox. So you think that over the course of the year, that probably works in your favor. But when it doesn't, it's pretty rough. And that's kind of what they've been running into this year. So that's definitely one of those things to watch the rest, you know, the next two thirds of the season, is how pitchers are keeping the ball in the yard on the road. Because as good as the Royals defense is, they can't bring a lot of those back. Lorenzo Cain got one, and it took a pretty good effort to do that.
Yes, it did.
And so, you know, you can't jump into the stands and go 10 rows back and make the catch. I mean, you can, I think. There's some rules about what you can't. But anyway, it's not going to happen. You know, they're not going to be making those plays. This isn't Major League 2. So no. you gotta see that improve from the pitchers on the road. And, you know, I think it probably will, but there's no guarantee that it will. So that's what to watch.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like you mentioned, it's already kind of, you can see where it gets better if Duffy and Ventura can keep it rolling. And, you know, some of the home run heavy parks they've gotten over and done with, but yeah, you know, it's still got their work cut out for them, you know, still playing Major League Baseball, still got a lot of, you know, there's Tigers always have dangerous hitters, and You know, the Cleveland's got some dangerous players. So, you know, they've got a lot of players. White Sox, they've got a lot of teams there that have a lot of capabilities to take it deep. But if we can, we'll leave on a positive note, something that when we talk about, just mentioned all the different teams in the division, and that if the Royals right now, if they can hold on for the next few innings and win as they're leading right now, that puts them back into first place. And we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier in the episode, but possibly the best thing about the Royals and some of their struggles this year, if there's a silver lining, it's that this division, 95 wins is not going to be the total that wins this division. It's going to be much less than that. And, you know, 84 wins would have won it last year. I think it's going to be a little bit higher than that, but it's definitely going to be between the two. So, you know, 87 wins, like we talked about, that sounds like a pretty reasonable number to win this division. And one of the things, you know, I think people get kind of wrapped up in just the Royals and how good and dominant they've been the last 2 years, but you know, this is kind of fun right now, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a dogfight in this division. I mean, they're a game behind behind Cleveland right now. They're a game ahead of Detroit. They're, you know, what are they, a game and a half, two and a half games ahead of Chicago right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, everyone in the division is right there. And
except Minnesota, but.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
I didn't even – wasn't even – care. They're 15 games behind.
Yeah, it's a safe enough assumption to not include them.
Yeah, I mean, the Royals right now, yeah, exactly. They're a game behind Cleveland, could be tied after tonight. Game ahead of Detroit, 2.5 games ahead of Chicago. So, I mean, it's going to be a dogfight right down to the end, and it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I think all these teams are going to be – going to have over 80 wins. Those four teams are going to have over 80 wins to end the season. So it's going to be a game or two. It might come down to the last game of the season. And let's check, who do the Royals play? Usually it's a division series, the final series of the season. Let's check this out here, who they play. They end the season
Please be the Twins.
Oh, no, it's the second to last series. But they end the season on a 6-game homestand, 3 against the Twins, and 3 against Cleveland. And I think it's all said and done, Cleveland will be the team the Royals are fighting with. So it very easily could come down to whoever wins that series wins the division. So, you know, kind of we've had a lot of fun things happen with the Royals this past couple of years, but, you know, it might not be. You know, they're not going to run away with the division like they did last year, but kind of soak it in. It's going to be a fun season. It's going to be the most competitive this division has been in a few years. You know, 2014, the Royals and the Tigers were back and forth, and you know, they only lost by one game, but they never really seem like they were going to take the division. It seemed like the Tigers may lose it, but it didn't really seem like the Royals were going to come up and take it. But this seems like for those four teams, really any one of them could do it at this point. So,
well, in that last stretch, I'm just looking at this now. You've got from September 2nd, you've got 3 at Detroit, or 3 against Detroit, 3 at Minnesota, 3 at Chicago, series in Oakland, whatever. Then the White Sox at home, then the Indians, then the Tigers, then the Twins, then the Indians, then the Tigers, then the Twins, and the Indians. Like, you're basically, for a month, you're playing only within your division. You know, and 4 games in Oakland, and that's it. So, in the last 2 weeks, 6 against Cleveland, 3 against Detroit. So, yeah, that's going to be a pretty wild finish if these teams are kind of in the same spots. Now, injuries, maybe cause some separation. Maybe that's the Royals. Maybe they fall back. Or maybe James Shields continues to work as a sleeper agent for the White Sox. He's been rocked in 2 starts as a White Sox. It's being traded to them. So, yeah, we'll see. But I think I'm with you. I think it's going to be Cleveland at the end. If the Royals are going to have one team that they got to get past, that's going to be Cleveland. I'd put both teams probably in the playoffs. One is a wild card, one winning the division. I don't like Cleveland either. So
it'd be awesome.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, that could be a pretty fun homestand. So buy your tickets now, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be it'll be fun to watch. I hope it does come down to the last. I remember in 2011 we were all at Kelly's the last day of the season. The Royals obviously were not in the race, but there were a lot of teams that were. That was the year that Boston had that epic collapse that got Terry Francona fired. That was the year that
trying to think of who hit the home run.
It was in the Rays game. It was on the Rays Yankees. It was Ivan Nova was pitching, I think, that gave it up. I'm trying to think who. I can't remember.
Dan Johnson.
That sounds. That his name? Sounds like it could be right.
Dan Johnson. But yeah, it was like a walk-off home run to overtake Boston, and just there was another game that finished close too. I think it was like Atlanta and St. Louis or something like that.
Yeah.
That same night, and it's just like, okay, it's just. That was a cool night of baseball. I will take that. So, yeah, it looks like that was Dan Johnson. Yep.
There it is. Yeah, so
it was like a pinch hitter extraordinaire, basically.
Yeah, and maybe it wouldn't. Maybe it would have been. It obviously would have been a lot more tense if the Royals were involved. But that was a really fun day of baseball. So I do kind of hope it comes down to the last day of the season, so long as the Royals win and go to the
playoffs.
And it might be even better if it's both teams know they're going to the playoffs. It's just who's going to be the division winner and who's going to be in the wild card. That would be much less stressful because you know it's going to continue either way. So hopefully that's what happens. But just kind of another positive note to leave on that this, despite everything that's happened, the Royals are still in pretty good shape to take this division and or get into the playoffs. So yeah, that'll do it for our show. On tonight, this evening, this morning, afternoon, whenever you're listening, thank you so much for listening. We always can't thank you enough for listening, being a part of the show, helping us do something that we so greatly enjoy. Be sure to go visit BP Kansas City for more articles like the one we talked about from Hunter, the ones we talked about from Hunter and Darren tonight. Lots of great stuff on there. Clint Scholes has a recurring. Diamonds in the Rough article that, you know, talks about all the prospects. If you're looking for some prospect information, David Leske has his Friday Notes where he usually does a preview of the upcoming weekend series and just discusses random Royals topics. Great stuff there always, from those guys. And then obviously a smattering of other great issues from their great articles from the likes of Craig Brown, Hunter, Darren, as we mentioned, and even the occasional appearance from your favorite podcast host, Michael Engel.
Sometimes
on the site, I am yet to write a post for there. Maybe it will happen. Maybe not. Who knows? But so yeah, that's it for the show. Thank you so much for listening. Visit BP Kansas City. Go to Kelly's. Have a good time. Appreciate helping out our sponsors because they've been so helpful to us.
Yep.
So look, keep tuning in. We've got more Royals stuff. This Royal Coaster is going to keep going up and down for the rest of the season. So keep tuning in. We'll keep bringing you Royals content and always love to hear from you and hope you stick with us. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.